Cults, Hidden Killers Investigates. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
For decades, people were harmed inside Greater Grace, and many of them were told that their pain was their own fault. Forgiveness meant shutting up. Questioning a leader meant questioning God. Speaking up meant losing everyone that you'd ever known. Then a group of former members called the Millstone sat around a campfire and started telling each other their stories. That led to a years-long investigation, a major series in the Baltimore Banner, and eventually a 172-page independent report that said the church's top leaders need to go. Alita Galvin started her own podcast at work on Greater Grace in 2023 before any of the official investigations launched. She now hosts Looking for Grace, the podcast, and continues tracking the story and talking to survivors. Oscar is also with us as our other guest, joining audio only under that pseudonym. He left over 20 years ago, but when the report came out, he could barely get through it, a report that is now public. Lawsuits have been filed. A former pastor has been indicted. The church recently quit an evangelical financial accountability organization while under review. Wonder what that means. And the leaders, the report said, should still be removed. Still there, allegedly. This is where things seem to stand as of right now. Alita, you started talking publicly about Greater Grace in 23 before the Banner series, before the Grace investigation even existed. When you broke the ice in this, did you have any idea how many people were waiting for someone to go first to share their story of their experiences with Greater Grace?
Honestly, no. And it was really a huge coincidence that at the time, the podcast that I had been a part of happened to launch just months before the Banner articles. And we had no idea that the Millstones were working behind the scenes, that the Banner was working on this. I give a lot of credit to the Millstones because they certainly did years of research before we ever entered the picture. And that series of articles and so much of what happened, even the work with the podcast, a lot of the credit really needs to go to them with all about their hard work. I really don't think this would have gotten the traction it got. Mm-hmm. At the time, we just came to a point where we realized we couldn't be the only ones that had experienced harm. And realized that maybe if we broke the ice and we told our stories, it might help somebody else.
Yeah.
Like even if they couldn't say it out loud, maybe they could acknowledge it to themselves, or maybe they would want to talk to us. We had absolutely no idea how right we were, unfortunately. And there's just so many people that I'm so proud of that have either talked behind the scenes, have talked to a friend for the first time, have come on the podcast to talk. It takes so much courage to speak up in any medium when you've been trained to be quiet for so long. I'm just really grateful and proud for everybody that has stood shoulder to shoulder and said, okay, we're done with this, not one more.
Yeah, I mean, there's the investigation, the report is out, anybody can see it. Greater Grace paid for it. I'll give them that credit that they had an independent investigation into them, and it came back with some pretty damning results, or some pretty damning findings, I should say. Just making the findings is one thing, and then acting on them, that's a whole other ball of wax. And it seems that there's some question as to, I guess... how well they're responding to the criticism that the report they ordered served up to them. They revoked some lower level ordinations and published a roadmap, but there's some names in the report that were specifically called out. And from what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, some are still in place. There's no timeline for when they're going to be removed or not removed or whatever they're going to do. Their financial accountability organization put them under a governance review. The church quits that. Does anything about the response tell you they actually heard what the report said? What's going on after this report says, you got a lot of problems here. Here's what you can do to fix them. What have they done?
Little to nothing. I mean, that roadmap was so vague, so incredibly vague. It was like, here, we have all these problems that have occurred in secret over decades. Here, we're going to fix it, but we're not really going to tell you how we're going to fix it. We're going to do this internally in the dark. You're just going to have to trust us. Oh, and by the way, the same leaders that they said need to go, they're the ones that are going to solve this. Like, It's completely ridiculous, but I am not surprised in the slightest. The Martin report that Oscar mentioned earlier, the church asked for that one too, and they didn't like the outcome. Mm-hmm. They publicly said the same thing. Publicly, they were like, oh, yeah, we're going to fix this. And privately, we're telling their members, yeah, right. Like, these guys are crazy. This is evil. Don't even read this. I'm quite certain there are people that are very, very committed that didn't read that report and refused to read it based on commentary that I saw on social media, which is really unfortunate.
Well, if it's a sin to do so, it's, you know, they villainize reading material that's going to, you know, might cast some shade, even if it's true. I mean, that's, you know, that's an interesting way of keeping people in your grasp on something like this. I have no idea. But I know I can say from just looking at patterns of other systems that have been a religious organization where you have some folks that are doing some shady stuff and it's like, oh, well, we're going to remove you. I'm not saying this is happening here. I have no idea. But typically what happens is those shady folks who've done some shady things that are called for removal says, oh, you want to remove us from your shady organization that we've been a shady part of for a long time? Well, we're going to talk about your shady things that you've been doing, too, if you're going to get rid of us. And then suddenly everybody stays in place and everybody's going to fix the problems together. It never really works out that way. But I would venture to guess maybe some of those dynamics might be at play, in my opinion, here.
It wouldn't surprise me, to be completely honest. Some of these people, particularly the top three in leadership, have been in their positions for over 20 years, which when you think of a board of an organization, that's an awfully long time to be in that position. You know, so, I mean, at that point, getting rid of them is going to be next to impossible. And even if they do, I don't think that they're going to fire them. I think that they'll probably throw them a nice big retirement party and give them a pat on their way out the door. I don't think that they're going to make this about any wrongdoing at all. I think they're going to do this as gracefully as possible and as wonderfully as possible for that guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's give us kind of a better idea here of What are some of the widespread issues here within this church specifically? I mean, we don't need to go into every single detail. It'd be impossible. But like, I'm assuming there's a lot of allegations here that are pretty dark against a lot of people. You've already listed one on that mission trip and what was going on there. I mean, is that kind of the culture, if in your opinion, as you would describe it across this thing, that's running unchecked?
There's so much. I had a really good conversation with the investigators myself. And one of the things that I'm concerned with above and beyond the sexual abuse, which I will never minimize that it's horrific.
Yeah.
Is the domestic abuse. I mean, certainly that was the case in my situation. And yeah. I have been made aware of quite a bit of that. And that to me seems to be almost more rampant than what's going on with the sexual abuse and likely feeds into the sexual abuse because unfortunately, you have kids growing up in these environments where they think that this behavior is okay. Yeah. And you have young men in particular who are seeing other men in these positions get away with these things like it's no big deal. So what's going to stop them from behaving that way? Nothing.
Yeah. It creates a hive of predatory individuals. Oscar, you know, you obviously you've been out of it for 20 years. You described reading some of the Grace Report as physically sickening, you know, only a few minutes at a time before you had to stop. Tell me, I mean, what to you? I mean, why is it physically sickening? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, I knew that that it was planned, you know, to come out. Probably around last summer, they announced that, you know, they had initiated it. I had followed the Baltimore Banner articles and on the first series of podcasts that Alita did in 2 years ago, you know, when all of this came to light in the spring and summer of 2024. And I sort of at first thought, well, when it dropped, I'm just not going to read it because I was already disgusted and I've carried this trauma, this burden of just feeling betrayed by the whole outfit really since 2004, since I left, because they had a scandal back then that resulted in a split of the church and this IAGM and the Sandy Cove meetings, and that's all on the internet. I never attended any of that, but so I was already very disgusted with the historical treatment of scandals around anything sexual, even if it was between consenting adults, and how it affected the ministry. I certainly didn't want to read anything about children or young people, knowing from the Baltimore Banner article some of what went on. Yeah. But after a couple of days, I did decide to download it. I had a few texts back and forth with Alita. I remember reading the first section and realizing who some of the perpetrators were that were not named, you know, in the initial Baltimore Banner articles, and just the gravity and of what they had done, and how could anyone hide in this finished work of Christ teaching and be a pastor, you know, an associate pastor running a affiliate church and grooming a teenage girl, for example, or on the mission field and SA-ing a girl, a young woman, not a girl, a woman in her 20s who was a faithful missionary. How could you do that? I mean, how could these teachings be real? How could they have any substance to them in terms of transforming people's lives? Not in terms of the mask they wear publicly when, they're in front of other Greater Grace people, but in terms of who they really are. And
Is that why they still maintain membership? I mean, I guess I'm trying to understand that part of it. I'm always baffled by this in every organization.
I'll tell you what I think it is. I think it's the sunken cost fallacy. I think people have so many years, in some cases, or decades invested in this thing. They don't know where the hell else to go.
You bought enough workbooks, and now it's like, shit, I still haven't met Xenu yet. I'm almost there.
Then there was the teaching of eternal rewards that, Stephen's made a lot of emphasis that, this church was going to get all these rewards in heaven that, because of going into all the world and teaching this finished work message. And it's like a holy Amway.
It is. That's a great way of describing it. It is a holy Amway. They all are. They are all holy Amways. I mean, just give them some pink Cadillacs so they could do some, Mary Kay at the same time. Might as well two for one. Then you hit both ends: cleaning products and beauty supplies, and eternal salvation, all in one. You just can't talk about how shady anybody is. I'm going to throw this one to Ichi. I mean, I'll start with you, Oscar, since you were just talking. If someone's listening right now, sees themselves in what you've described, still inside something like this, whether it be Greater Grace or out there in another one, and carrying and holding on to this, what would your message be to them?
I would say, trust yourself, what you're feeling, what you're sensing, even if you can't put words to it. And no matter how hard it is at first, and it probably will be, start setting boundaries. If there's a demand on your time and life and energy or money or whatever, or even ability to forgive, that you can't realistically, comfortably meet, say no. Learn to say no. And if you're in a toxic environment and you're feeling it, then you have a hard decision to make. And that decision is, what is the cost of staying versus the cost of going? In a lot of cases, you may, if you work for an employer who's part of the church, you may lose your job if you go. You may lose your family. Yeah. Your spouse may leave you. She or he may choose to stay with the kids, with the church, and fight you in court. Things have happened.
Yeah, it's religious coercive control. When you control so many elements of someone's life, it makes it a hell of a lot more difficult for them to leave. And I think boundaries is a key thing there. Especially I think that's a very true statement for so many people that find themselves caught up in something like this who weren't born into it. They may have walked in and may have at that moment in time, and I'm curious if you would say this too, were you not great at setting boundaries, not just necessarily within your religious life and your spiritual life, but just in general with people as a whole, when you found yourself, you know, finding greater grace to be something positive in your life initially? Were boundaries not your strong suit at that moment?
No, boundaries have not been my strong suit until I got into psychotherapy years later.
And that's what they prey on, is that.
Right. And I'm from a broken family myself that had no boundaries.
Sure. And especially, and then Elita, I'm going to guess you were brought up not even probably knowing what they were, because it's just, it's absolute. There is no boundaries. It's you're going to do what you're supposed to do. Same question to you, someone listening right now who may be hearing this, finding themselves going, oh, I feel like it's a sin listening to this. But also feeling like, yeah, I can kind of relate. What would you say?
I want to echo what Oscar said, but I also want to point out that yes, it is overwhelming to think about the things that you could lose if you were to think about walking out the door. But I also want people to know that when you do, you're not alone. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of us out here who have wrestled with those same questions, who have dealt with those same emotions, and who very much care about the people that are still there. That's why we do what we do. We don't hate anybody that's in there. We don't hate you guys. We actually care very deeply. We want you to be well. And if that means staying and fixing it for you, good luck. Sorry to say that, but good luck. But for many, to be well, it's going to mean you're going to have to exit. But I want you to know that on the other side of that exit, there is joy and happiness. Bad things may happen to you, but it's not going to happen because you left. There was teaching that like you could get cancer of the throat, that you could get hit by a car, these terrible things that could happen to you. That's not true. Bad things happen in life, but it's not happening because you walked out the door of greater grace.
God.
And there are so many people out here that do care and are willing to be there for you.
It is baffling. It is baffling that, I mean, it's such a childish way of thinking too, of just bad things will happen to you. We hear it with IBLP. We hear it with other ones too. It's like, ooh, and it's this fear of the unknown. And ultimately, that's what this all ends up being, is the fear of the unknown. And since you don't know it, we're going to claim we know it. And if you question what we know, well, then you're questioning God. There you go. The recipe to start a cult. Jeez. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on and giving us your insight into your experiences and your opinions with Greater Grace World Outreach. Obviously, these have been everybody's opinions, allegedly, and everything else that throws into there. You can do your own research on the group, that project, or that 170-some page research into what's been going on with them is also out online if anybody wants to read what their findings are. And then compare it with what the action plan is to fix some of these things and do your own, make your own judgment. But just hearing you guys give us your stories today was powerful. Thank you very much. Again, your thoughts on our website or on our Substack and YouTube, the links are in the description. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.